Welcome, everybody, to the April 13th, 2026, regularly scheduled meeting of the Town of Vail's Planning and Environmental Commission. Please note that all members are present except for Commissioner Middleton, who had a prior engagement to being appointed to serve on the commission. Our first thing today is the swearing in of our new members. There are three of us that are present.
Perfect. If you guys could stand and raise your right hand and repeat after me. I, please state your name.
I, John Redeker.
Do swear.
Do swear.
That I will support.
That I will support.
The charter and ordinances.
The charter and ordinances.
Of the Town of Vail.
Of the Town of Vail.
And the Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the United States.
And State of Colorado.
And the State of Colorado.
And will faithfully perform.
And will faithfully perform.
The duties of the Planning and Environmental Commission, sorry.
The duties of the Planning and Environmental Commission.
Perfect. I think Greg printed out the oaths for you guys, if you could sign them, and then I will take care of it tomorrow. Thank you so much. I appreciate you guys, and congratulations.
Thank you, Stephanie. All right, next item on our agenda is election of officers. We have two officers to elect. We have the chairman as well as the vice chairman. So we'll start with chairman. I would like to nominate Brad Hagedorn to serve as chairman of the Planning and Environmental Commission.
I'll second that nomination.
All right, we got a nomination and we have a second. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Is anybody opposed? Nobody is opposed. Congratulations, Commissioner Chairman Hagedorn. You want to take it away for the vice chairman?
Sure.
Turn it over to you.
Next, we have election of our vice chairman for the PEC. Is there a nomination for vice chair?
I nominate Bill Jensen.
Is there a second?
I second.
All in favor of Bill Jensen for vice chairman, please say aye.
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 All opposed?
Nobody's opposed.
Hearing none, it carries unanimously. Okay, that completes election of the officers. So with that complete, we'll move on to our main agenda items. The first agenda, 5.1, has been requested to be tabled to the April 27th meeting. Is that correct?
That is correct. The first two items, actually, 5.1 and 5.2.
Okay. Oh, same applicant. I see that. So we can handle them in tandem. Is there a motion to table items 5.1 and 5.2 to the April 27th meeting?
Mr. Chairman, I move that the commission tables agenda items 5.1 and 5.2 to the April 27th, 2026 regularly scheduled meeting.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Second for Commissioner Jensen. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. All opposed? Hearing none, it carries unanimously. That brings us to agenda item 5.3 of our main agenda, a request for the review of a variance from section 12-6D-6 setbacks Vail Town Code in accordance with provisions of section 12-17 variances Vail Town Code to allow for a below grade addition beneath the garage within the front setback located at 327 Rockledge Road, E, Lot A, Vail Village filing 1, Block 7, a resubdivision of parcel A, Vail Village filing 1, Block 7, and a resubdivision of lots 14 and 17. It is PEC file 26-5. The planner is Heather Knight, and the applicant is Nia Vail LLC, represented by Pierce Austin Architects. Heather, do you have a presentation for us?
I do. I have a short presentation for you.
Okay.
Going to begin by showing you the vicinity map to get your bearings as to where this property is located. This is Forest Road on the north side of this property, and as it loops around to form Rockledge, it is the first developed property. Town of Vail actually owns this property here on the corner. And then this is the side of this property. So the property itself, the whole development lot actually encompasses, it's a duplex, so two sides, and this is the east side. So this request is for a variance to allow for an addition beneath the garage within the front setback. And this portion of the basement level area was proposed to be located below the existing garage encroachment, which was part of a variance that was granted in 1987. And it's approximately 64 square feet, as you can see here in this quick diagram. So I'll kind of get into the backgrounds of why that garage, or how that garage got into the setback, and a few other meetings that recently occurred with the PUC. So this previous front setback variance was granted to this garage in 1987, as I said. And the applicant at the time said it was a desire to protect existing trees as well as working with the challenges of a sloped site. Staff at that time believed that there were similar cases to this, but also felt that a lot of the hardship was self-imposed, but they still said, okay, 5-1, like, we'll grant this variance. It came to, because of that, they said it was sloped site. It really is not considered technically a sloped site per our standards. So that's just something I wanted to note on that. And back in March of 2024, so a few of you might have been on the PUC at that time, this property came back with an application for a variance for a second story addition above the existing garage. The PUC denied this application because it was going to increase the bulk and mass within the front setback. They weren't support in the variance request because it wasn't necessary to achieve compatibility and uniformity of treatment, and the applicant didn't meet all of the criteria for that variance. So then, after that, after the March 2024 meeting, the design of the project kind of tweaked again and scaled back the second story addition to meet the front setback requirement. However, the deck above that garage was very awkward. And I think we all talked about it and noted that at the time and went to the design review board with that, and they said, no, bring it back to the PUC. Let's get this right. So it was brought back to the PUC, and the variance was for a deck into the front setback, and that was approved because it did not add bulk and mass, and it made sense. There was kind of an awkward, is this a roof, is this a deck? It really made sense for the design of that home. And now this setback variance. This variance would allow approximately 64 square feet below grade, so below the garage. So no increase in bulk and mass, but we'll get to the criteria in just a minute. So there it is, full development lot, kind of where it stands here. It is within that corner. It's kind of because of the angle of the property line, that's the corner where the setback line would be. A little bit closer in, same view you saw before, showing that the 20-foot setback falls along here. And granted, this is below grade, below the existing garage. But that original variance was only approved for the garage itself, that single story. So here's the rendering. You can see that deck that I mentioned before and how it does come across that, you know, basically this line here of the second story is that setback line. So this portion of the deck is what's encroaching in the front setback. And it really did make sense for the construction of the home, the design of the home. Otherwise, there would have been an awkward roof kind of happening at that location. So that was approved. So zoning, what I wanted to point out is there is no additional site coverage available. In fact, they are well over their site coverage existing. Maximum is 3,026 square feet, and they're at 3,676 square feet. So little under, you know, 600 square feet additional site coverage. So taking advantage of that, that's the reasoning behind going below the garage, was to gain some square footage without impacting the site coverage. Their GRFA number is fine with or without this small portion here. So the variance only increases the amount of GRFA in the setback, but it does not increase the overall site coverage, and they do not go over GRFA. So we've got three criteria. The first is the relationship of the requested variance to other existing or potential uses and structures in the vicinity. Because this is a below-grade addition and located entirely on property, it doesn't increase the bulk and mass of the structure, so therefore not impacting adjacent structures or properties. However, review criteria number two is where staff feels that this criteria is not being met, and this is the degree to which relief from the strict and literal interpretation and enforcement of a specified regulation is necessary to achieve compatibility and uniformity of treatment among sites in the vicinity or to attain the objectives of this title without a grant of special privilege. As mentioned before, the previous setback granted in 1987 only permitted a single-story garage within the front setback. And although some adjacent properties have also been granted setback variances for their properties, the proposed below-grade addition on the site will add to the amount of enclosed square footage within the required setback. So, staff finds that there is not sufficient evidence or hardship unique to this lot to support the grant of a variance. There's nothing, like I said, it's not considered to be a steep slope per our guidelines. There's no practical difficulty or unnecessary hardship involved in basically digging out for a basement for an additional square footage. Challenging construction means and methods and other challenges do not constitute a hardship. This is kind of, again, one of those self-imposed, like they don't have to put a basement in, and so the grants of another variance of the site just seems to be unnecessary. It's also a kind of a little bit of a slippery slope. I've looked through kind of variance requests for below grade additions within the setback. I could not locate any that were approved. Can't say as a definite that that's never happened, but is this something that we want to start allowing is a question that the staff has, as we haven't seen any structures really being without a considerable hardship, whether it be site constraints, something similar to that has been allowable for a structure to be within the setback.
Not to derail Heather, yeah. But you know, I know we've seen this quite a bit recently, particularly like CC1, CC2 mm-hmm. zone districts, more commercial core, where we've talked about underground setback variances.
Right, and that's
But there's not precedent you've seen for in the more residential zone districts?
No, that's true.
Okay.
And so the third criteria, staff feels this third criteria is met, and that is the effect of the variance on light and air, distribution of population, transportation and traffic facilities, public facilities and utilities, and public safety, and it's really not impacting any of that. It's below grade, doesn't impact any other properties, no infrastructure changes, so staff feels like that is met. So, based on the fact that criteria two is not being met, staff is recommending a denial of this variance.
Thank you. Are there questions, commissioners, for staff?
When you say that, Heather, that this is technically not a steep slope, mm-hmm. how is that determination made? There is a slope.
There is a slope, it is not greater than 30%. So we have a couple of different ranges, and one is 30 to 40%, and the next step up is 40% plus.
Okay, so it's not greater than 30%.
That's correct.
The code has a whole slope analysis that talks about average slope over certain distances, and it doesn't breach the criteria to be categorized as a steep slope. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah.
So if it was categorized as a steep slope, how would this analysis change?
The criteria refers to that single-story garage within the front setback. There are some provisions that you were granted, and that is very specific to that. It does not mention below-grade improvements. it does mention, you know, a height limitation, so that often refers to a single-story garage.
I guess my question is that you and maybe I didn't understand your answer. If it was a slope over 30%, would we be evaluating
Yes.
this application completely different for something being built into a setback? Is it more allowable?
No, it does call for the single-story garage. It doesn't make a mention of below-grade improvements that could be interpreted if it was a steep slope.
Okay, so
as a means of construction.
So right now it speaks to above-ground improvements for a garage into the setback, but it doesn't talk about the
exactly.
code doesn't talk about below grade.
Yeah, I think the steep slope provision specifically calls out a single-story garage in the setback.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions from commissioners of staff?
If the first level were shaped like the third level's proposed, would there be an issue for a variance?
No, because the second level, the first level is existing. So that was the
right.
way it was built a long time ago. So the second level, they actually did push back to meet
yep.
the setbacks. So yeah, if the garage was angled in that funky way to meet the setbacks.
Well, if the basement is angled in that way, well,
right.
it wouldn't
if it falls within
variance.
The setback, you mean behind the setback, then we're fine.
And then in some of the materials, it kind of read like the crawl space is already there. Is
That's
this actually required to dig deeper, I guess, into the below ground area of
yeah,
the setback?
Yeah, I'm going to hand it over to
okay.
these guys, and they can explain, because I think that is their argument against mine in terms of the constructability and those challenges set forth. So I'll have them kind of go over the steps that it would entail to require this square footage into this setback.
I have one more question before you guys get started. It was mentioned earlier that these kind of variances have been approved for commercial buildings. What is staff's concern, or what's the potential negative impact of this becoming a precedent for residential?
Well, I think first with the commercial buildings, site coverage was always maintained. And so this one is well over its site coverage already. So that's a little bit of a difference here. I think then you're kind of you're not adding to the site coverage that would be already taken care of because of the first floor, the garage. But that's something to consider. And also, if there was additional site coverage warranted and the attempt was to just create more square footage, but under the setback, you're increasing the amount of GRFA within the setback, and that's something that we just really haven't seen. It impacts, why have a setback then? It's a below grade. Granted, it doesn't impact bulk and mass, but I think it's a barrier, it's a requirement that we have in our code that we have to be very careful.
Anything else from staff? Seeing no more questions, we'll move on to the applicant presentation.
Hi, Reed Kildow with Pierce Austin Architects.
Kit Austin, Pierce Austin Architects.
And Heather, if you just want to flip to maybe that front elevation or front 3D. So, you know, I think we talked a lot about whether or not that's a steep lot or not. So I think it's good to get a little 3D view and really understand what we're talking about. So on the, you know, the what would be outside corner there of the garage, it's at grade. And by the time you get to the back edge of the garage, the other direction, you are basically at grade. So it drops off really heavily in that area, especially on the front of the lot, and dies off. So when you do an overall average, it might not meet the steep slope requirements. But as Heather mentioned, in 1987, you had almost unanimous decision to approve this garage location. And when you look at it, it actually is a pretty steep drive into that garage as well. So because of the slope of this, basically what you had is them building that foundational wall around the garage, you know, all the way down to 4 foot frost depth at the back edge where it meets grade. So you had a really deep underneath garage area. That currently is a deep crawl space that, you know, varies, but it, you know, there's enough space to get down there most of it, and you pretty much have over 4 feet already.
So that's structural slab. It's not a slab on grade.
Exactly. So it's structural slab, and it's not slab on grade. That's already a pre-existing crawl space.
The structural slab being where beneath the cars where they park in the garage.
Exactly. So there's already that existing crawl space, and it's not just slab on grade for that whole location. So you already have that deep foundation going around the whole perimeter of the property. And, you know, talking about, Heather mentioned site coverage. We already are not increasing site coverage. That area already counts towards site coverage. So the argument that we're increasing GRFA out of the setback, realistically, we have a set amount of GRFA. And due to the steep nature of this lot, we really can't even capture all of it. We're going to be under no matter if we take this space or not. So we're not really increasing past the code recommended GRFA in this location. And we get into, you know, Heather already basically mentioned those other first and the third criteria that you're voting on. We meet all those criteria. We're not including increasing bulk of mass. There's going to be no effect to adjacent properties and transportation, everything like that. All remains the same. You know, really not changing anything in that regard. So let's get into the one that we don't have approved. Reason for seeking variances in Townville Code. In order to prevent or lessen such practical difficulties and unnecessary physical hardship inconsistent with the objectives of the title as would result for the strict and literal interpretation and enforcement of the Townville Code. So the strict and literal, you know, interpretation of the code is not in line with the objectives of the Townville Code. And so chapter 12, specifics and purpose of this, the regulations are intended to achieve the following more specific purposes: to secure safety from fire, panic, flood, avalanche, accumulation of snow and other dangerous conditions, promote safety and efficient pedestrian and vehicle traffic circulation, and lessen congestion in the streets, promote adequate and appropriately located off-street parking and loading facilities, to conserve and maintain established community qualities and economic value, to prevent excessive population density and overcrowding of land with structures, to safeguard and enhance the appearance of the town, to conserve and protect wildlife, streams, woods, hillsides, and other desirable natural features. So all these objectives that the town is referring to, I believe we're not affecting at all. We have an existing structure, an existing crawl space. We're not really affecting any of the objectives, and I believe that's why these objectives aren't in line with the undue hardship that we would have from the strict and literal interpretation of the code. Reasons for seeking variances in chapter 12 also goes on to say a practical difficulty resulting from dimensions, shape, of the site, which I believe we have a really uniquely steeply sloped site on one location. It also goes on to say, or the location of the existing structures thereon. So I think that's where we really fit. The existing structure is already there. We already have that structure. We're not creating anything new. We're really just trying to excavate the entire basement. This wouldn't affect any neighbors. This wouldn't affect any of the actual objectives that the Townville set out to achieve. And I think the strict and literal interpretation would go against the overall objectives. If we look at what actually needed to happen if we didn't get this variance approved, we would have to build a new structural wall at an angle in that location, and then we'd be allowed to have 4 feet of unexcavated space above that section of the garage. So realistically, I think there's the practical difficulty of building that new wall when we empirically think about this and what the objectives of the town is trying to do. Empirically, you know, we're building a diagonal wall. It doesn't really serve a purpose. It doesn't really have any effect on any of the objectives that the town set forth in their variance requests. And we're just unnecessarily building a diagonal below grade just to meet the strict and literal interpretation of the code. There's no really reason for the town to not approve this besides a strict and literal interpretation of the code. And I think, you know, when we empirically think about this, why can't it be done? Does it really make sense to build a diagonal wall in a crawl space just to meet the code? I know the town talked about GRFA, and this could lead down a slippery slope, but we are below our GRFA, and we're not increasing it above the allowable GRFA. That already counts towards site coverage, so site coverage is going to stay the same. So I think the strict and little interpretation would really be a hindrance on our client, because the town code reasons for seeking variance already mentioned structure thereon for a reason for allowing a variance to happen. So we have the existing structure there, and we're really just using that existing structure, and we'll be excavating a little bit more.
Yeah, and I think to address maybe that this could be a bad precedent, I think this is such a unique condition. The volume's there, it's kind of, it could be utilized. I mean, it's the volume's there. So it's like, I mean, I think the adjacent unit had utilized some of that space already. And you know, it's a proven volume that's already in the setback. So
okay, I think that's it. Any questions?
Questions for applicant?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I get to special privilege. I agree. It's GFRA. Everything's there. You know, there's no physical hardship to building that diagonal wall. But I guess I go back to 87, and the variance was granted for this. And okay, good. And then now saying we want to build underneath it and have access to that 67 square feet again. Help me in my mind with special privilege so that the next applicant isn't referring to what this commission granted here.
I think with the special privilege bill, we're not talking about us excavating underneath a slab on grade and creating this new structure below a garage. We're talking about an existing structure. So I think when you look at, you know, the purposes and reason for seeking variance, it clearly lists existing structures. So I think that's our hardship, is the structure is already currently there. If we were building a brand new underground living area that didn't exist previously, you know, just below a normal garage that was in another precedent, you wouldn't have this unique situation where we already have foundation going down because of the slope, but really large foundational walls around this garage and a floating structural slab in the garage area. So it's like existing conditions, I think, that existing structural conditions that really makes this a unique situation.
Can you point us to the code section that mentions existing structure?
So that's chapter 12, variances, 1217.1, purposes, reasons for seeking variance.
It's under 1217.1.
Yep. And it says a practical difficulty of unnecessary physical hardship may result from the size, shape, or dimensions of the site or the location of the existing structures thereon.
Do you think that means existing structures thereon that including structures that were built by essentially the property owner or the applicant? Or is it referring to existing structures that might have predated?
A code section?
Yeah, or a newer development. I don't know.
I think it's referring to the, you know, what's existing. So I think it's referring to anything that was built there previously. In this case, in 1987, it was previously approved. So this is where we run into the dilemma of something that was previously approved by unanimously by another PC in 1987. And now we're dealing with, you know, an interesting condition because of that approval, because of the shape of the lot.
So it seems to say also, though, a practical difficulty or unnecessary physical hardship may result from the size, shape, or dimensions of a site. That's not, we're not dealing with that. Or the location of existing structures thereon. What is the practical difficulty or unnecessary physical hardship that's resulting from the garage above that necessitates that a variance is granted? I mean, isn't this being sought voluntarily? This isn't as if development can occur because of some sort of hardship, physical hardship. This is a party voluntarily seeking to expand an existing structure.
I think the practical difficulty is what you really need to look at. A practical difficulty, you know, why are we building a new foundational wall to retain soil when there's two structural walls already there around the entire perimeter that are existing structure? So we're building unnecessarily building, you know, a new structural wall and then filling that space with dirt and then building a wall in front of that so we have a 4-foot crawl space.
It was more just a practical question about what's going on out there right now. When I look at this image, so where the garage is, the foundation walls that you're referring to for when the structural slab was put in, and then how far down do those walls go?
They go down a full story plus the frost depth, right?
Reed? Yep. That's
the volume's already sitting there. So now we're gonna add the basement. We're gonna have to come back and fill in a corner with dirt, essentially, which is pretty tricky. It's like we're creating interior retaining wall to retain it against our own foundation.
Below the structural slab is that crawl space, which as you go further east is right now deeper than it, on the western side where cars enter the garage. Is that true?
Well, I think the site does, it's a weird shape. It's a very narrow lot that's got streets on both sides. It is pretty steep. I don't know about the exact slope, but it's pretty tight, and that's why they put the garage there when they did. You can see, as if you were to even scoot down 10 feet, all of a sudden you can't get off of that road. You can't come up from Forest Road. So, you know, they position this house where it could be built. It's like it's kind of the form follows the function. And the volume is there already. It's like it just, the foundation is around all sides of that volume, all the way down below grade on all sides there. So the volume's there. So now we're going to come back and we're going to have to, I don't know. It would be kind of weird to fill it with dirt inside of the foundation. It's just, and I think this is one of these things where it's such a unique case. It's not a precedent. If someone comes back with something similar to this, you can look at it as a case-by-case basis. This is, you know, it's just, we have the ability with the GRFA to use this space. It's already pre-built. And now it's like, how do we deal with this corner? We can just put a framed wall and say, no one go in there. That's kind of weird too. Or it's like, or we can put a concrete wall and fill with dirt. And that's just logistically crazy against our own foundation inside the building. It's just like, that's really weird. It's like, and so we're just seeking the variance because that's what, the volume's already there. It's like, so, I think, we could put a framed wall and.
So, and so, just so I'm clear, currently underneath the garage, say the west side of this room, that would be the what's below the garage door, that structural wall, you're not going to add on to it or anything, it doesn't need to go deeper. The structural wall is the wall that's being proposed for this area, as well as the southern wall.
We're not even really proposing any structural work. The walls are already there. Like, we're going to probably put in a new floor, but the walls go all the way around the garage, 12 feet below the garage surface,
12 feet
plus more. It's like, it's already a volume that's there.
So basically, you're either going to frame a wall that follows the wall, or you're going to frame a wall that cuts off a corner.
Well, and I think that's where Reed's argument is kind of, it's logistically really hard to come back and build that. And I know the cost and construction's not a variable in your decision, but like, that's just weird. It's like, we could put a fake wall, and then all of a sudden it goes away later. It's like, we're trying to be upfront. This space is already there.
But I think even if we put a fake wall, that's where we get into.
Or it's just not a fake wall.
But I'm just saying, a fake wall doesn't count. Like, if we're doing the strict and literal interpretation of the town code, we have to fill that wall with dirt. It has to be a 4-foot crawl space. Maybe the town will let you to frame it, but yeah, I think the point of that code section of it being a 4-foot crawl space is that you couldn't just go back and tear that wall out later.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And I think when you talk about, when you guys, many of you were here for Concert Hall, we're in the same condition where we already have, underground space in commercials. And now the town has allowed all commercial spaces to have that underground space count and be allowed. But now for residential, it should, be the same situation where we're not going to frame in, site coverage underground in commercial buildings, because it practically doesn't make sense. We have existing foundations there. It's already built. And I think the town was able to, on commercial space, let that all go. This would be one of those same unique conditions where, we have existing structure below grade, and all we're trying to do is not build an unnecessary, new foundation wall, put dirt in there, and then frame a wall at 4 feet, so we only have a 4-foot crawl space.
Can I see the floor plan again? Mm-hmm. What's the access to this? Where does that come from?
So if you see over by the hot tub, as you go across from the outside corner of the garage in red, all the way to the hot tub area in that deck, that gets you all the way down to grade. So it's very steep in that location. So you go all the way, you drop about 12 feet.
Within one story, above the red triangle, you're driving into the garage. And then all of a sudden, on the other side of the property, you're going out at the hot tub. This is just an addition to that family room.
And I think we already have DRB approval if we built that foundational wall going diagonal.
That grade on the back is lower.
Yeah, correct. Substantial. Okay. A whole story in 30 feet. So.
Okay, got it. Okay.
And that the red triangle is already volume that's there. So to come back, I'm just concerned with how do we, I don't know. I know that's not your concern, but it's just.
I think empirically you can see
it's really tricky.
It's a practical hardship. A practical difficulty building this foundation wall just to meet a strict interpretation of the code, when that could just be living space and wouldn't affect bulk and mass or any other aspects of the objectives that the town laid out.
Is that corner between, say, the garage wall, the door wall, and the south wall, maybe the west and south wall, how far into the setback?
7.5 feet.
Yeah, I think something like that.
That corner?
Yeah.
And that's the furthest extent it'll go, and the setback is...
Well, and it's already under the garage. You will never see this. This space is there already.
But you're not going any deeper, so even if there were a utility issue underground, that space is already being used.
That
by
space
the
is there
variants.
Right now. Yeah, you can go in that space. Yeah. It's already there.
Yeah.
So, and I think this is just such a rare case. Like, if you have this come in front of you again, you can interpret these case by case. It's not a precedent. It's I doubt that there are any more cases like this. And it's a weird lot. It's very slim.
Yeah, and I think the size of the lot is what forced this to, you know, really have that foundational wall go all the way down and have a not a slab-on-grade garage. If it was a flatter site, it would be slab-on-grade, but, you know, by the time you get to one corner to the other corner of the garage, south to north, you're dropping an entire story. And so that's what's caused it to have that unique structure of, you know, an elevated slab that's a structural slab and not just a slab-on-grade scenario. I think it's one of those where you wouldn't run into much, but I think it is, you know, from an empirical standpoint, there's a reason the town decided to allow, and you guys decided to allow, for commercial space to have all that underground space that currently exists and is structurally there not count towards site coverage.
What utilities run through the setback right now? Do we know?
We do have an existing survey. I don't know if most of the utilities are all on the backside, I believe. I think the transformers on the Beaver Dam roadside.
Do we have any water lines, sewer lines?
Or is that forestry? Nope, I don't believe there's anything in that crawl space currently. Yep.
Or through the front setback in general?
No, I mean, yeah, it's not affected, yeah. It's just such a weird case. That little cube or that little triangle is there right now empty. So.
But again, or do we have water and sewer lines going through the front setback currently with the where the current location of this
you have existing survey? I don't believe we
have to check it. Yeah. I think there's definitely the gravity fed lines are going on the north side there. We'd have to check, right?
Yeah, we'd have to locate those all, but.
But I don't think this affects utilities in any.
Yeah, and I don't believe there's any utility
easement. There was an actual utility easement in the front setback.
Yeah, I don't believe there was.
It wasn't a designated easement. Yeah. There was not.
Right. There's no easements currently designated.
It could be a concern. That's why I'm asking.
No, that's a good call.
You know, if there are current lines through there, especially water and sewer, in the event of expansion for some reason, could be a concern.
I think staff would also like to note that the difference between the commercial and residential being in the setback. I mean, commercial inherently has tighter setback requirements. The density in our commercial areas is much tighter. It's public use, et cetera. Where in residential, I mean, the front setback is 20 feet. Sides here, I think, are 15. So it's a little bit, you know, everybody wants their space, and that's part of that criteria as well, is just to maintain that. So that's a perspective between those two, I think, that's worth distinguishing between.
What is the definition of practical difficulty? Practical or unnecessary physical hardship? Is there a definition in the code for that?
Not in the definition.
Not in the code, there is not.
Okay.
I think everyone's kind of, you do get hung up on unnecessary physical hardship, but it does say practical difficulty or unnecessary hardship. So practical difficulty is in the code. You know, this is a practical difficulty.
Are there other questions for the applicant or commissioners? Hearing none, we'll move on to public comment. I don't see anyone in the room. Give anyone online who'd like to comment, please press the raise hand button. We'll give you a couple seconds here. Is there anyone online first off?
There are a few online, but no hands are raised.
Okay. If you see any raised in the next minute, let me know, but otherwise we're gonna close public comment. We will move on to commissioner comment. We'll start to my right with Commissioner Jensen.
I guess I agree with you guys that this is truly a one-off situation. You know, I think back to the 87 PEC and granting the variance into the setback for the garage, and I don't know what their thoughts would have been if it had been proposed to build out below the garage at the same time, but the fact that they were unanimous in granting the variance into the setback for the garage carries some weight with me. I tend to agree with you guys that the space is there, and to wall off 67 square feet doesn't seem practical to me. So, you know, I just struggle. I mean, obviously we saw this property in March, you know, went through kind of a round of stuff where certainly felt like they were trying to take advantage of every opportunity there. We got to a good solution, which makes me feel good. So I think where I'm at is I'm going to be supportive of this variance.
Thank you. Commissioner Redeker?
Yeah, this is somewhat of a unique situation, or I think this is a unique situation. It's somewhat unique in that I agree with staff's interpretation, a strict interpretation, but, you know, I'm focused on the second criteria, the degree which relief from the stricter literal interpretation enforcement of a specified regulation is necessary to achieve compatibility and uniformity of treatment among sites in the vicinity or to attain objectives of this title without the grant of special privilege. You know, when this setback was, variance was granted in 1987, they allowed for the construction of the walls that go 12 feet deep into the setback in the area where, you know, we're talking about today for the variances. I think that this would be more concern. I understand the concern about setting precedent and allowing GRFA into setbacks. I do not think that the commission should allow people to begin construction or have new construction and build, or even and build into the front setback, or even add on to an existing structure and do below grade or above grade GRFA into a setback. This is below grade, so it's not visible. A lot of those concerns, when you look at the purposes of Title 12, as was noted by the applicant, we've got 11 of them. You know, we're not concerned with a lot of those purposes here in terms of them being interfered with, because we're dealing with something below grade. And I think, you know, to me, feel a little bit more comfortable in approving this variance simply because of the existing walls below grade. I don't think we'll find another circumstance similar to this around town where it's already been constructed. Again, if this site was different and the slope didn't drop off and these structural walls had not already been built in conjunction with the variance that was granted earlier for this property, I think if it was on, you know, slab on grade, then they wanted to excavate underneath it, I think we'd be dealing with a separate question. But we do have an existing structure. They want to utilize the space below it. So those are my thoughts for now.
Thank you, Commissioner Lenner.
Agree with the previous comments, and I think it boils down to the fact that practical difficulty is somewhat subject to interpretation, and here there seems to be a clear practical difficulty. So I also agree that this is a very unique situation and is worth granting given the circumstances.
Thank you, Commissioner Wallace.
Yeah, I don't think denying the variance helps us achieve the objectives of the setback, especially given the existing use of the space. I think the lack of real clarity and what a practical difficulty leaves a lot of room for judgment here. I don't think, given the unique nature of the situation, it creates a special privilege. And I also think it seems like with the history of the variance and the shape of the home and the lot, that, you know, getting to use as much of your GRFA is important, and if we're not going over it or up to it, that was like another factor in my mind, so.
Thank you. Online, Commissioner Brown.
So I would say that I am very persuaded by the what feels like an illogical result of walling off existing enclosed volume. Having said that, I don't know that I share everybody's hope that this isn't going to be discussed as precedent. I believe it probably will be. And I think we're going to find ourselves talking about GRFA in setbacks more than I would necessarily like. I do appreciate that it is below grade. I do appreciate that it is already walled in. And because of the very unusual history of that 67 square foot corner that has an existing variance at grade from 1987, I think I can support this, but it's a bit of a close call. It feels dangerously close to privilege, but I think I'm a yes.
Thank you. I'd agree with everything that's been said here. In at least in the commission, the time that I've been on it, the kind of hard line in the sand with setbacks has been GRFA. That has been kind of the line, you know, kind of the point that we die for, right? But this is an extremely unique situation, I think. And I kind of want to talk about why, just so we have it on record for any future GRFA requests in setback. You know, when I first looked at this, I misunderstood that I thought it was a new area being dug, right? And if that's the case, this was a hard no, in my opinion. And just to put on, also to say, I understand why staff had to recommend denial here, okay? So I completely understand the recommendation. But I think the commission has done a good job of kind of sussing out these nuances to this. You know, the fact that we have an existing approved variance for the structure, and it was built to in conformance with that variance, and we have walls that extend down to enclose the structure anyway, we have existing structure there, which I think you did a good job pointing out is mentioned in 12, in the beginning of the variance. I don't need to quote the exact, you quoted before, but the beginning of the variance code there that calls out existing structures, and this is an existing structure. I think that's a critical nuance, because anyone else who may come for GRFA in setback that does not have, you know, completely existing structure there, that's something that would kind of be a different circumstance where it may not be allowed. And, you know, I think the code also has to make sense. And taking existing structure and coming up with a finagled way to wall it in or fill it in does not make sense in terms of furthering the town's goals. I also don't think this is contradictory at all to our denial of the request for GRFA above the garage in 2024. I want to make that clear too, because that was a clear increase of bulk and mass in setback, which does violate the town's goals and does have, you know, impacts on light, air, and other portions of criteria that would fail to meet. Whereas here, none of those impacts are occurring. We're using existing structure. And thus, I think it makes sense. So I'd agree with my commissioner's statements. I believe we meet the criteria and the requirements very closely due to the extremely unique situation of this home. If there are no further comments, I would entertain a motion.
I'd like to make one, but I guess I have a question because the way it's written, it's easy to change to approve. Do we just eliminate the findings that you guys had listed below the motion?
I think we
is there
can.
Not an alternate motion there?
No, there's not.
No.
I mean, I don't.
You can always say that it met those findings.
You could mention the findings and say that you found them to be met.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I'll make a motion. The Planning and Environmental Commission approves the applicant's request for a variance from Section 12-6D-6 setbacks Vail Town Code in accordance with the provisions of Section 12-17, variances, Vail Town Code, to allow for an addition beneath the garage within the front setback located at 327 Rockledge Road East, Lot A, Vail Village Filing 1, Block 7, a re-subdivision of Parcel A, Vail Village Filing 1, Block 7, and a re-subdivision of Lots 14 and 17. This motion also finds that the findings listed below on page 8 and page 9 were met.
Thank you. There's a motion by Commissioner Jensen. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Commissioner Wallace. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Hearing none, this carries unanimously. Thank you.
Thanks for your time, guys.
The next item on our main agenda is 5.4, which is a request for review of a floodplain modification permit pursuant to Section 12-21-11-2, floodplain modification permit, Vail Town Code, to allow for an in-stream habitat restoration project to improve aquatic habitat and stream function at the Vail Nature Center located at 841 Vail Valley Drive. It's unplatted in Ford Park. This is PEC application 26-6. Planner is Cole Michelson. Do you have a presentation for us?
I do. It should be pretty short, but I'll kind of just run you over the project a little bit and then hand it over to Pete. This is a request for review of a floodplain modification permit. This is kind of a unique application. We don't really see a lot of these in front of the PEC. We've seen floodplain use permits before, but not modification permits. So I'll kind of run over the difference on that one a little bit and what the work is that is being proposed. But mostly we're just looking at kind of just the criteria that are outlined in the town code, not the overall scope of the project. We're just focused on the floodplain modification being presented today. So just to give you guys a little bit of an orientation on where this is located, the work that's being proposed would be between the Vail Nature Center and Ford Park and the amphitheater. The map up on the screen kind of shows the gold parcels are town-owned properties, so it's the creek is bounded by two town-owned properties. And then the flag parcel is the Nature Center, where a majority of the work will be staged and being done from for the creek restoration project. So, and then the blue is the floodplain. As you can see, it kind of stretches out onto that parcel. So the work that is being done in there is for consideration today. So, that's about it there. So for why this permit is required. So within 12-21-11 flood hazard zones, floodplain modification permits, this permit is required with any work that happens within that 100-year floodplain. And there were kind of two steps to this. So the floodplain administrator conducts a technical engineering review, which was in the staff memo. That would be Chad Sally, our town engineer. He would have looked over the documents that Pete and his team had given to the town about the hydrological study, and he reviewed it and he found that all criteria were met. So that's kind of the one kind of prong on this, and then also the commission evaluates the requests based on the code criteria found in the staff memo as well. And just to kind of give you guys a little bit more, so really what you guys are going to focus on and from what Pete will discuss with you is the intent of the floodplain modification permit is to make sure that it protects life and property with any modification within the floodplain, and it maintains that floodplain function. Mostly we're looking to make sure that nothing really changes and it avoids any impacts to property or safety things down the stream when this work has been completed within the stream. So, and then this more so just kind of highlighting that point that does the project function safely within the floodplain. And I have the criteria on the slides as well, but I can kind of hand it over to Pete to maybe talk a little bit more about the work being proposed in the floodplain and give you guys a little bit more of an understanding. So, but if you have any questions, please let me know.
Before we move on, is there any questions for staff before we go to the applicant? Just to clarify, we're not looking at amending the floodplain boundary. Like, that's not like a letter of map amendment or anything, correct?
It's just work within. It's just the work happening within the floodplain.
Okay. There's no further questions for staff. You can turn it over to the applicant.
Good afternoon, commissioners. Pete Wadden, watershed specialist for the town's Environmental Sustainability Department. So the project at hand resulted from the settlement funds from the 2021 snowmaking spill that occurred on Gore Creek that most of you likely remember. I partnered with Eagle Valley Trout Unlimited to secure some other grant funding. So we have this roughly $600,000 in-stream restoration project that's designed to actually increase floodplain capacity and connectivity, restore riparian habitat, but primarily enhance in-stream habitat for trout and aquatic macroinvertebrates and deal with some hydrology issues. Interestingly, that result from modifications to the stream upstream of this area before this type of regulation existed in Vail. So informally, the purpose of the floodplain modification permit and the need for this permit is to prevent people from just filling the creek and causing flooding issues for their neighbors downstream. The goal of this project is actually to improve flood capacity of this reach. And the details of the studies included in your packet show that, in fact, this project as designed will not only cause no rise in floodwaters, but will actually increase the flood capacity of this reach. So we're not bringing in any external boulder material or anything like that. We're working with the rock material that already exists in the creek. We are bringing in some woody material that will be placed, some of which will be placed within the 100-year floodplain, but the calculations you can see and that Chad Sally has reviewed indicate that none of that will cause a rise in floodwaters. About all I've got on that.
Is the, I just want to go back to the 21 incident and, you know, obviously there's money, there's dollars, there's grants available. By doing this project, I mean, are you guys confident that the stream will be restored to the habitat for the population there back to the pre-21 level?
Yeah, so honestly, I would say that, you know, the incident that occurred in 2021 was an acute, discrete aquatic life mortality event. The trout populations and bug populations in the section of stream that were affected, which is actually slightly downstream of this reach, have already recovered, fortunately, through natural processes. But there was a settlement between Vail Resorts and the state for damages due to the loss of fish and aquatic insect life. So we are now in an opportunity to actually improve to better than pre-2021 standards. Which is great. It aligns with the town council goals of removing Gore Creek from the 303D list of impaired waterways by 2029. So I see this as an opportunity to move the ball forward, not just to get back to baseline.
Great, thank you.
Mm-hmm. What's the construction schedule here? Is this something that's going to be done in one summer during drier months? Is it going to occur over a period of years?
Very good question. So there are constraints on when we can do work in the stream channel that basically are dictated by Colorado Parks and Wildlife and enforced by the Army Corps of Engineers to avoid impacting trout spawning. So there's a window. Typically, it's from August 15th to the end of September when in-stream work is allowed, before brown trout spawning begins in October and after rainbow and cutthroat spawning, I believe, have ended in midsummer. Parks and Wildlife is going to allow us to start about 2 weeks earlier than that, on August 1st. So the plan is to do all of the in-stream work between August 1st and September 30th, 2026. As far as extending into additional years, some of the vegetative restoration work will continue later into the fall, into 2027, and possibly subsequent years, but it won't be any kind of heavy equipment, rock moving, just trying to get better vegetation established on the stream bank and in places that were impacted by construction
so
access.
This summer would be boulders. Is it scouring the stream bed to create some of these deep pockets that I see on the plan?
Yeah, it's going to be
backhoes, or what, how is that done?
Pretty large excavators in the stream channel. With sediment mitigation measures placed at the downstream end of the reach, and there's going to be a sediment visible downstream of this project, but we'll be implementing best management practices to try to mitigate those impacts downstream. The gist of it is to try to create a low flow deep channel. The problem that we see in this reach at this time is that it's shallow and wide. So there aren't really pools and riffles. It's very homogeneous habitat for trout. And that's a result of the upstream reach being very powerful, moving a lot of sediment. That sediment moves into this reach, it settles out, and that fills the pools and makes it all a mile wide and an inch deep, which is not conducive to fish or insect habitat.
Is that the impact of the straight shot by the golf course?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. What we call the shotgun reach by a golf course that's straight and fast. So the idea is to establish pools, but also a connected deep channel between the pools. And that's done by digging those out and creating the pools, but also establishing a regime of hydrology that will move sediment through this reach in the future. And that's where a lot of the woody material comes in, and the creation of point bars to direct the flow so that the flow of the stream itself scours those pools out rather than filling them in the medium to longer term.
Okay, so we're not worried about digging, dredging, so to speak. You know, for instance, it's a completely different example, but dredging occurs in the ocean and then sediment fills in, and they're constantly dredging to open, you know, a harbor or whatever it may be. The intent here is because of the way the channel will go, the point bars, the direction, the flow of the stream will keep the flow going. We're not going to have excavators in there every 5 years or 10 years excavating. Is there anything that's done to the bottom of the stream bed in order to at least assist with helping sediment not build up at the beginning? You're going to add rocks, or are you going to, aside from the boulder features and stuff?
So no rock from outside the project area will be moved into the reach. It's all going to be about rearranging what's already there. The anchor of this project is, I believe, three boulder veins at the top end of the reach, the upstream end, that essentially create the grade off of which everything downstream is built. And then there's already an existing boulder vein right by the pedestrian bridge. If you can imagine standing on the pedestrian bridge between Ford Park and Vail Nature Center, there's kind of a deep pool to the downstream end, and just below the bridge on the upstream side, there's a really robust boulder vein that creates that pool. So that kind of anchors the downstream end and prevents floodwaters, large runoff from changing in a major way that whole section of stream. Everything that we do in between will be between those two boulder veins that kind of anchor the whole system. And the placement of point bars, rock bars, strategic boulders will be designed to create those pools. To your first question, no, we do not expect to be back in there with excavation equipment ever after this project. This is meant to be a durable project. I will add the caveat that Commissioner Hagedorn brought up the shotgun reach that's upstream. I think we have a window of time after this project's built to address the source of the problem upstream. You might say 10 years to deal with that source of sediment that's coming from upstream. and the golf course enhancement plan that you all reviewed and passed on to town council last fall is the plan to deal with that.
Does this project require a minimum amount of stream flow in order for things like sediment and whatnot to be pushed through? I mean, we're facing drier times here, and runoff this year is probably not even going to be runoff in a traditional sense, and it's just going to be a little bit of high water, but you're not going to have any sort of rushing water or scouring going on this year and maybe in future years. How does that impact the way we look at this?
Yeah. I guess I could answer that question in a few ways. I don't see many silver linings to this year's snowpack, but if there is one, it's somewhat fortuitous that we picked this year to do this project. The ability to operate equipment in the creek is, it's just going to be safer and easier with low flows. It's not going to be a year like 2019 where I'm wringing my hands, will the water be low enough by August 1st for us to safely get an excavator in there? So during project construction, low water is a good thing. Post-project construction, one of the goals of this plan is to make the system more resilient at low flows so that we have deep pools for trout to take refuge in when there is high stream temp and low flow. From a hydrology standpoint, the extent to which, look this is an anomalous year, and I think it will continue in our memories, you know, a decade or more from now to stand out as a very unusual year. But it's a sign that we are going to see a drier and warmer future on Gore Creek and in this valley. So to the extent that that is the case, both the cause of this problem and the symptoms will be kind of equally affected by those lower flows. The high flows are what's moving material from upstream and depositing it here. And the idea is that this project design capitalizes on the energy of the stream itself to move material more effectively through this reach rather than depositing it. And that will be, you know, equal in magnitude to the ability of the upstream reach to move material into it.
The is it called a vein structure? Mm-hmm. Is that what the name of it, that's going to be installed just above the bridge? How does that work in terms of catching sediment that's going to be dredged up by the excavators and other equipment in the creek?
Oh, you're talking about the best management practices during construction to try to minimize
downstream impacts from impact. digging up pools.
I think it's going to be more or less like a silt fence. I don't know if Brent Scarborough is online. He's one of the he's actually the heavy equipment operator who's going to be leading this project. Brent, are you able to speak up about what your sediment best management practices will look like?
I can.
Can you just introduce yourself for the record, please?
Oh, Brent Scarborough, and I'm the owner of Frontier Environmental Services.
All right, go ahead.
We will use what's known as a silt curtain. And this is basically just what it sounds like. We'll have a floating boom across the creek and a curtain drop down into it that will collect as much sediment as it can. We will also do things like push the creek to one side and work, you know, kind of channelize it to one side and complete construction on the other. And then we'll flip the water into the completed side and finish construction on the other side so that we're not constantly working in the active channel. There will be days when we're channelizing it that it'll be, you know, there'll be high turbidity. And then for the most part, when we're working, it won't be in active flow conditions.
Okay. In the event of those high turbidity days and you have this silt fence that's supposed to help create or prevent silt from flowing downstream. Is that fence, do you have to maintain? Do you have to pull silt that builds up there at the fence? Do you have to remove that during the process? Or does the fence just go in and sit there for the month and a half that work is occurring?
In general, we would like it to last the duration of the project. However, if it did get to capacity, it can be removed and replaced. Okay. The one thing about those that I'm not going to sugarcoat, they collect silt and sediment. And so when you remove one, you also have a pretty good disturbance. But those are very discrete events that do not take long to clear up.
Okay. Thank you.
Are there other questions for the applicant?
I have a question about the large log placement. The reference is sheet 23 of 24. Those, do I understand those to be 20 feet tall and they'll be driven into the creek bed?
Yeah, more accurately into the creek bank.
Okay.
Yep. So these, rather than using, riprap or something to stabilize stream bank, the techniques mm-hmm. being proposed better mimic a natural system and softer materials like woody debris. So this project relies on a lot of 20-foot sections of 12 to 18-inch diameter tree trunk embedded into the stream bank to stabilize banks, prevent erosion, create sediment capture opportunities, and refugia habitat for trout fry and aquatic insects.
But that's part of the permanent placement, right? That's not...
Yeah, these logs are meant to be anchored in place
okay.
nearly in perpetuity.
All right.
Are they just driven like piles, basically?
Brent, do you want to talk about what... I think they're buried, but Brent, go ahead.
It is a pile driver. We use basically a sheet pile hammer that's modified for logs.
Any further questions for the applicant?
I just have a kind of follow-up, but I know the town, as they looked at the budget, deferred some capital projects. Did any of those impact golf course timing, et cetera?
We don't have funding for project completion on the golf course at this time. I am hoping to complete design of the first phase of the golf course project in 2026, maybe into early 2027. I had applied for one grant to try to get that project done. We did not get that grant, but I've identified a couple of others. I actually have a call about one of them tomorrow. So there is not town funding for project completion. There's some town funding for design of the 11th Fairway project, the first project on the golf course. And we're hoping with some help from the state to get some dollars to make that happen in the next year or two.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Is there another question, Lauren? Sorry.
Yeah, I think, some of them have been answered. So it sounds like the wood piles are not going to be a safety hazard for strainers because they truly are permanently fixed.
Very good question. So some of these root wads will stick out into, will be visible. So the trunk yeah. is embedded into the bank and the root wads stick out. They're not like a strainer that naturally falls across the creek and you have branches and a tree trunk in the main flow of the channel. Their placement is by design outside and redirecting the main flow of the channel. So I don't want to minimize that there are hazards to whitewater navigation in yeah. a natural or modified system, but they are They're certainly less hazardous than most natural tree falls, but serve the purpose that natural wood does in a an unmanaged stream system.
And the lifespan of the structure is estimated to be
decades. Brent or Lucas, would you want to talk to how long you expect or kind of what you think the life cycle of the woody material would be in this project?
Yeah, I can speak to that. This Please. Is Lucas Babbitt yeah. with Watervation, the principal engineer for our company. So the anything wood related obviously is prone to decay, but when that wood is constantly moist and not exposed to the sun, it lasts a very long time. So the literature states that in Colorado, large wood generally will last 20 years. So to and then after that, it starts to decay. The purpose of these structures, though, is to snag sediment as it moves through the system. And so during the course of that 20-year period, the large wood structures are going to snag sediment, and it's going to help form bars. In conjunction, we have a revegetation plan that's going to be layered into this project. And so over that 20-year period, the vegetation, the grasses, and the shrubs will establish, more specifically, willows on the banks and provide the root mass and the density required to serve as the long-term sediment snag. So this is kind of the large wood is, I don't want to call it temporary because it's not, but if we're defining temporary as anything less than 20 years, the large wood serves as the temporary structure. Long-term, greater than 20 years, the vegetation establishes and serves as the permanent structure.
So the intent is that you're not replacing these every 20 years, it's just natural processes take over and manage exactly. the stream flow.
Okay. Exactly.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, very good question.
So there was a section talking about an improvement, like an accessible platform, and you know, this is all a little new to me, but I was struggling between like restoring the riparian habitat and then bringing and attracting more people in to use the area. So yeah. I was hoping you could talk to that a little bit.
Yeah, it's a very good question. So going back a little bit to the project history, the funding for the project began with $250,000 natural resource defense fund award that usually would have required a competitive grant process. But because it was a result of an incident that had occurred in this watershed, the state, both Colorado Parks and Wildlife and the Attorney General's office that awarded this Natural Resource Defense Fund grant, agreed that if we could get matching funds, they would earmark this money for the Gore Creek watershed. So we applied for another $200,000 in Fishing as Fun grant money from Colorado Parks and Wildlife.
Okay.
That's all about improving fishing opportunities, including in this case for handicapped anglers. So that's part of the why for this fishing platform, is to create access for, and this is really unique in Colorado, most handicapped fishing access is on lakes, just because it's a lot easier to build a pier into a lake than into a stream. So Fishing is Fun was pretty excited about the opportunity to give handicapped anglers access to a newly restored reach of stream that should have really healthy trout populations. But that doesn't address the concern that you raised about foot traffic and or wheel traffic impacting the riparian areas on this stretch of creek. That is already occurring. This area is pretty heavily impacted by user access to the creek. And the goal of this project is to mitigate those impacts and do that through strategies like strategies we've used elsewhere on Gore Creek, where we designate some access points and eliminate others. What we found is people want to access the creek. And if you block everything off, they will find access points to get down there. So rather than trying to close everything off for restoration, we are a little bit more selective and do our best to kind of model human behavior and figure out, do we need an access point every 50 yards or every 75 yards on this stretch of stream, and place those kind of sacrificial areas in locations where we think people will want to use them while closing off and revegetating others.
Okay.
So this is one that's, it's in a location that's already impacted. This will kind of harden and elevate it and stabilize it with boulders so it's less prone to the erosion from people accessing there. And then in other locations, as you move upstream in the project reach from that spot, we're going to be doing the same kind of thing, using subtle barriers and signage, restoration area keep off, maybe some thorny vegetation to try to deter access while giving people access in specific locations. So the project goal is to mitigate the problem that you've identified.
Okay.
Yeah.
My last thing was related, like if there are gonna be redevelopment at Ford Park, I was kind of surprised that the stretch that we're working on goes all the way down kind of next to the amphitheater.
Mm-hmm.
I was curious if you had any concerns, because one of the criteria is related to like the comprehensive plan for that area. And there is a lot of stuff, I think, coming in that area, so, or at least under discussion. And I think, I mean, I brought that up because I think development has negative impact on our streams, right? So I was gonna ask you before if the timing was right, but based on what you said earlier, it seems like the timing is just really good right now, given the snowpack, but.
Yeah, it's a little bit of an opportune moment given the snowpack. It's also somewhat opportune from a funding standpoint. We've got the means to make this happen now, and hopefully it makes the creek system more resilient, you know, to pollution, to other developmental impacts that might occur in the future.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think the hope would be that any development at Ford Park would follow best practices to not impact the stream, right?
Yeah, 100%. But I wanted to point that out.
Yeah.
As you're
talking
about that.
I will certainly be advocating for that to be the case, yes.
I know you will.
Especially after we put all this investment into preparing it.
The only question I have is this money better spent addressing the source of the problem in the shotgun reach, or is it more if we need to take a win while we can get a win right now?
Yeah, it's a very good question. I would say if I were the Emperor of Vail, I would have, you know, all-powerful decision maker, I would have addressed the problems on the golf course before this downstream problem. Like I said, I think we have a window of time after this project's completed to deal with those problems further upstream before they start to erode the benefits of this project. Some of it's just the nature of the funding, that we wanted a project that was close to the incident that this was settlement funds for. And to be able to access the fishing as fund dollars, we needed to do this in a place where people could go fishing. Yeah. And you can't fish the golf course when it's in operation.
Yes, for that kicker money, you need to have it be accessible.
Yeah, so we're not letting the best be the enemy of the, I think, very good in this case. Yeah, and I think we have potential to do a lot of good with this project. I wouldn't be supporting it if I didn't.
But once this is done, we're kind of on the clock in terms of being to a point where we've spent this money and done this work and are back to square one if we don't address the source.
We're supposed to fix the creek by 2029, Brad. So yeah, we got to get on top of this.
Yeah, unfortunately, we don't decide funding here.
So. I know.
Are there any more questions for the applicant?
I just say thanks for this update.
Yeah. Thank you all for your thoughtful questions.
Yeah. If there's no more questions, I'll just open it up to general comment from commissioners. If there are, as opposed to going down the line, are there any further comments from, actually, sorry, we'll check public comment first. There's no one in the room still. Is there anyone online?
No, there are no attendees online.
Okay. Seeing there's no attendees in the room or online, we'll close public comment and move on to commissioner comment. I'll just open it up generally if there are comments from commissioners.
I'd just like to say we have a review criteria for granting this permit, and those are found in the staff memorandum on pages 13 through 16. It's quite a long list of criteria, but they're focused on making sure that no work is done in the floodplain that's going to be detrimental to the general area around that floodplain, as well as impacts to people and property downstream. Going through each one of these criteria, this project is different than maybe what you would see normally for work in the floodplain. You know, here we're doing work that's going to improve the floodplain and the health of the stream, and hopefully prevent further damage downstream simply because of that work's being done. So I think that all those criteria are met.
Are there comments from any other commissioners? Seeing none, I would entertain a motion. I would like to please note there's an added condition that was provided in person today regarding an Army Corps of Engineers permit when the motion is made.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the Planning and Environmental Commission approves the floodplain modification permit pursuant to Section 12-21-11-2 Vail Town Code to allow for an in-stream habitat restoration project to improve aquatic habitat and stream function at the Vail Nature Center located at 841 Vail Valley Drive, including the findings on page 16 and 17 of the staff memorandum, and the condition that the Town of Vail floodplain modification permit is dependent upon receipt of an Army Corps of Engineers nationwide permit.
There's a motion by Commissioner Redeker. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Commissioner Lintner. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 All those opposed? Hearing none opposed, this passes unanimously. Thank you, Pete. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Commissioners.
Yep. Thank you.
That is the last main agenda item for today. So next, we have approval of the minutes. Is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we approve the minutes from our last regularly scheduled meeting on March 23rd, 2026.
Second.
Commissioner, a motion by Commissioner Redeker, second by Commissioner Jensen. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Are there any abstentions?
One.
Lauren, you might want to abstain. You weren't here.
Oh. I abstained.
Yeah. Passes with one abstention. Is there any information updates today, Cole?
No, there's not, but as always, thank you.
Okay. Are there any questions for staff before we adjourn on information update? Hearing none, is there a motion to adjourn?
Move that we adjourn.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed or adjourned? Thank you.